Mother Jones said over 100 years ago. She said, the capitalists say there is no need of labor organizing, except that they themselves are always organizing and show their real beliefs. And this is true. The capitalists are always organizing to get the most out of any crisis. We saw that as flight attendants after 9/11 and the bankruptcies that ensued and the way that they used that to strip us of our pensions, cut our pay, make our jobs worse with the power of the bankruptcy court. And because we had our unions, we could fight back and keep our unions and keep our contracts intact, even though they took so much from us. We still had a way to fight back. And what we learned in that process is that if you're not setting the agenda at the beginning of a crisis, then the capitalists will run away with the terms because people will be so desperate for any kind of resolution, any kind of help, that they'll take anything. And we can't allow that to happen. So we have to set the agenda.
Yes, everybody, it is Friday, March 5th, 2021. That was Sarah Nelson, everybody. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our unemployed Trump staffer, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics and the latest updates on his internet connection, which is not at functioning on all cylinders today. Just be forewarned, everybody. I think we got it going all right, but we might be having to take Sean's picture down in a little bit if it crashes. So we shall see. We shall see. Anyways, on today's show, the Sunrise Movement launched a campaign for, quote, good jobs for all last night. The video launch event featured Sunrise activists and then Sarah Nelson, who you heard of here. She, of course, is the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, and Representative Ayanna Pressley, who introduced a historic jobs guarantee resolution a couple weeks ago. The Good Jobs for All campaign calls for jobs that would help stop the climate crisis, a federal jobs guarantee to help end the COVID recession, and jobs to address those suffering from climate disasters. You can get involved by clicking on the Join the Raise link in today's show notes. Really exciting move on the part of the Sunrise Movement. Just love, love, love that organization. Some big rulings in the Supreme Court this week. In a 5-3 ruling, the United States Supreme Court made it more difficult for undocumented immigrants to fight deportation, even those who have lived in the U.S. for almost their entire lives. That opinion was written by Neil Gorsuch. And Amy Coney Barrett, Trump's last-minute appointment following the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, issued her first majority opinion this week. This time, in a 7-2 ruling, the Trump court was joined by Justice Elena Kagan of the so-called liberal justices. In this ruling, the court rejected a Freedom of Information Act request from the Sierra Club for documents about harm to endangered species, according to the New York Times. Barrett argued that, quote, the records were protected by an exemption to the act that shields documents that would disclose deliberations inside an agency before it makes a final decision, unquote. The ruling overturned the ruling of the Ninth Circuit Court. This may have some wide-ranging impacts on the Freedom of Information Act requests and the transparency of government. So keep an eye on that. And if these rulings are only where it's getting started, there's some really doozies coming down the pike. And it's once again the reminder that elections have consequences. We are going to be living with this court for a long time. And some potentially discouraging climate news. I don't want to kind of throw out the baby with the bathwater quite yet, but John Kerry, Biden's climate envoy, is reportedly talking to some of the largest banks and asset managers in the U.S. about contributing capital for clean energy. That's according to CNBC. The news comes just a couple of days after Kerry tapped Wall Street veteran Mark Galagly to join this climate team. Now you can imagine why some climate activists are a little bit concerned. Jane McElvey, the most amazing organizer in our country right now. I'm sorry if I'm I don't mean to offend anybody, but she's freaking amazing. She took to the pages of The Nation this week to warn national labor leaders not to buy into Silicon Valley's promise for sectoral bargaining. Right? She basically's got all the sirens blasting in the air saying, "Don't do it. This is a sham." And Federico Klein, a Trump appointee within the Department of State, was arrested this week for taking part in the January 6th insurrection. Before joining the Trump campaign in 2016, Klein worked for the Family Research Council, and his mother noted that Fred's politics run a little hot. Would you like a cookie? And the stock market tanked this week. In today's more local news, or regional news, however you want to put it, the Pennsylvania Gaming Board, hold on, Sean just disappeared, so I'm going to bring up his profile pic. Here we go. The Pennsylvania Gaming Board is the best job in Harrisburg if you can get it, or are appointed to it like Frances Reagan. Yes, the wife of State Senator Mike Reagan. Frances Reagan was appointed to the gaming board this week with no announcement or press release, and she will be getting paid, you know, a cool $145,000 a year to attend one or two meetings a month during her term. Nice work if you can get it, or you can kind of marry it, I guess. And Pennsylvania's number one. Woo! Yes. Moving up this week to from last week's second spot, Pennsylvania now boasts to be the number one position for the state with the most people arrested in the January 6th insurrection. Yes, and guess which PA county is number one? Of all the counties in Pennsylvania, which county sent more people to the insurrection than any other? God, I feel some hometown pride right now, none other than my own Bucks County. That's right, the first district where we elected a Republican this past year. Remember that? Remember that? Just saying. In a new report by Penn Environment Research and Policy Center, it found that of the 53 Pennsylvania waterways it tested, quote, microplastic contamination was found in every spot, from Lake Erie to Pittsburgh's Three Rivers to all the way to the Delaware River. The report calls for the passage of bills such as the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act, which calls for a banning of single-use plastics and environmental remediation efforts. I might just jump in and talk to you. I didn't put this in the show notes, so this is why it's a little rough right now, but there's going to be some events coming up from Lockhaven. Lockhaven University, if you remember, is one of the universities that is being pressured into a consolidation of three universities, Mansfield, Lockhaven, and Bloomsburg. And they got some events coming back up from the next few weeks from AFSCME, who are seeing a number of workers being cut. Right. And eliminated. And all that. Also an open forum that's coming up from ABSCUF. So we will talk a little bit about that today, too. In today's last call, SpaceX finally lands its Starship. Yes, the SN10 successfully launched from its Boca Chica launch pad just after 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Then for the first time, it stuck the landing. But it blew up a few minutes later. Oh, God. And a new Star Trek movie is in the works, and this time it will be led by an original script by Kalinda Vasquez. She's one of the main writers of the Star Trek Discovery series. She's going to be busy, too, because she's been working with George R.R. Martin on the of Game of Thrones fame on an adaptation of Roger Zelazny's sci-fi novel Roadmarks, and that's going to be with HBO. Live long and prosper, Vasquez. Live long and prosper. A new analysis of satellite data by Chinese scientists confirmed for the first time the existence of space hurricanes. Like, you know, whatever. Like, we need those too. Sure, okay. Whirling storms of plasma that occur in the Earth's upper atmosphere. But these hurricanes don't rain water droplets. They rain electrons. It's kind of fun. And the Orbital Assembly Corporation, or OAC, announced plans to begin building the first space hotel in 2025. The plan is to open the space station for guests in 2027, but you'll need a net worth about of a cool $50 million if you want to be one of the lucky 400 guests. And the company claims to be that the spinning Voyager station will feature moon-like levels of artificial gravity. And according to the company, it will also feature themed restaurants, viewing lounges, movie theaters, bars, libraries, gyms, and a health spa. And just coincidentally, the company is also now open to investors. Smell a little grift, anyone? You should have seen their announcement video. It was like a bad Zoom call. Like cameras that were, you know, set up in old laptops. Right? It was crazy. Anyways, this week's in free will releases. Got a really interesting one coming out. Sing Me Back Home. It is a DDH double IPA. Brewed with a base of fluffy flaked oats and wheat, hopped in the kettle with Citra, then double dry hopped with Strata, Moter, and even more Citra. And that one's called Sing Me Back Home, and that comes in at a nice 8.7 ABV. It's a cool label art on that too from Kolahari. Really cool stuff. And if you're looking to burn a hole in your wallet to buy some serious craft beer cred, well, if you are one of those folks, here's one for you. Free Will is got Saffron Black Lime Ralphius, right? That is an imperial stout aged in bourbon barrels with saffron, black lime, and fleur de sel. That comes at a whopping 17.5 ABV, but that's not the biggest number you're going to see here, because one bottle, one of the big bomber bottles, is going to set you back about $50. But, you know, one time, you got a special occasion coming up, why not? And our latest evolution of the brand, another exploration combining unique culinary ingredients into a style so ripe for experimentation, I'm reading something that I shouldn't be reading right now. I actually just thought, this is giving you a little bit of my state of mind this week. I actually just thought that Sean put in these notes about something that he was cooking that I hadn't read yet. And then I realized I'm actually reading the kind of the description of the beer, whatever. We'll talk about what kind of week this has been, because it's been, I didn't quite hit bottom this week, but I definitely hit a lower plateau. Let's just put it like that. Anyways, you want to tune in, reminder to turn into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. This coming Monday, March 8th at 7 p.m., oh, I'm looking forward to this one. Out to Coop Live welcomes State Representative Elizabeth Fiedler and State Senator Nikhil Saval. We'll be talking about proposals for a people's budget and looking at progressive organizing in the state. I mean, if you remember, like 2020, we've talked about this on the show. It expanded the kind of progressive squad in PA to what, you know, I like lovingly kind of like refer to as now a progressive battalion. But Representative Fiedler, Summer Lee, Sarah Inamorato first showed PA that left progressives could win and win big. Sean Kitchen, of course, did an interview for Raging Chicken kind of back in the early days before their election and was one of the first people to come out and say they're going to win. Everybody poo-pooed him, but look what happened. Right? Nikhil Saval and a new class of left progressives have added to those victories, and now we're beginning to see bold initiatives and policy demands while on-the-ground organizing continues. And not only continues, but you've got these representatives and these state senators who are actually kind of like continuing to be part of those movements, right, and stay connected with them, which is amazing. So you'll be able to call in live on the Podbean app, or you can join our live stream on our YouTube channel. Again, that is Monday, March 8th at 7 p.m. I'll be with Elizabeth Fiedler, Representative Elizabeth Fiedler, and State Senator Nikhil Saval. I'm so much looking forward to that. It's going to be a great, great discussion. And want to remind you also of kind of one of the things that all of your gamer friends out there should be checking out, and that's the Game Inn. The Game Inn, that's with two N's, the Game Inn is located right on Route 309 in Quakertown. It's a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show. They're the parents, the family of one of my son's best friends. They're awesome folks. The Game Inn has almost every product that you could imagine, from retro N64s, Nintendo DSs, PS4s, and Switches, you name it. They got video games for all platforms, large collection of collectibles, including action figures and Funko Pops. Like, literally, you go in there, there's a wall of Funko Pops. It's really quite cool. It's really, really kind of cool. But awesome family, get in there. And also, if you got kids, they get discounts on every A on the report card. Check them out on their Facebook page. Follow them on Twitter at the Game Inn. Got the Game Inn with two N's. Got a question about a game? Look for something hard to get. Message them on Facebook. Drop them an email at thegameinnpa@gmail.com. Or give them a call, 267-424-2535. Check them out online at thegameinn.com. Again, that's with two N's. Great folks. And really, they're kind of like, you know, looking for something that it's hard to get. You got one of those older gaming systems you want to kind of break out of the dust, and you're looking for some additional games. They're just a great place to go to. Plus, all the kind of latest stuff is there, too, as well. The Game Inn, check them out. And look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. And look, we got rid of Trump. right? Now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. We're here for the fight, and we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media and the movement and the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And look, if you're not ready quite to become a patron, you can just go right to paypal.me/rcpress, right? Or you can head over to our YouTube page, right? And just go to our main YouTube page. You're going to see right in the header there a little tip me jar. You can click that hit tip me jar and kind of send us a tip of anything that you got there. But members are what drives us. We want to thank you to all the folks that are kind of stepping up and becoming members of Raging Chicken. And I also want to remind you that if you're watching us on YouTube right now, or if you're going to go check this out later, make sure you smash that subscribe button. Make sure you hit that bell so you'll know every time we go live, right? And like this stream right now, right? Like this stream right now. The more you like the streams, you get more subscribers here. The more we're able to amplify the voices that would bring on this show. They're going to reach more people, and it helps other folks, right, who are like-minded, find our show too as well. So, you know, please go ahead and do that. I've been so psyched. I think we're up to, and again, we're not kind of like rocking the house at this point, but like we're already in a, since we started promoting the YouTube channel, we went from like, you know, like five subscribers, and now we're up to 91 the last I checked. So please go over, hit that subscribe button. Even if you're not on YouTube a lot, right? You're listening to the podcast, you normally listen to the podcast, take a few seconds, head on over to YouTube, hit that subscribe button, and help more people find this show. Oh, Sean, that's my endless rambling kind of introduction for the day. How's that one?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
You know, I'm hanging in there. Like I said, it's it was a week. We'll get to that a little bit in the last call this week, but it was a rough one.
I mean, I'm a little disappointed this week. I didn't really have too much going on, but you know, I'm disappointed that Trump wasn't made president yesterday on the 4th.
Yeah, you know, it's I think it's because that you know what they found out that Trump has struck a secret deal with the Biden team, and now Biden and Trump are actually working together.
The lizard people.
Have you heard that version? That version is actually out there, right? As
what, the lizard people or the people working together?
No, them kind of like, you know, working behind the scenes with Biden or with, oh, you know, it's just it's crazy. There was actually on, I think it was on Chris Hayes last night, Brittany Zelodny, I think is how you say her last name. And I'm forgetting the guy's name, Sean Smith or something like this, but they were on kind of talking a little about the latest versions of QAnon, and it's just like, but you know what,
these are the people that predict the end of the world, but are actually dangerous when doing it.
Well, no, you know, look, that's true. They predict the end of the world, but the biggest problem is they haven't found a good watchmaker yet. So their watches are always off, right? So they keep on saying it's going to happen, and they realize that no. So look, I think they're recruiting a good watchmaker or clockmaker right now. If you're really looking to go all kind of off the deep end with these folks, that's what they need. I mean, it's crazy, but you know what? They made a really good important point. We had, you know, Jordan Hopkins on the show last week, talking a little bit about this kind of like, you know, the Patriot Party, kind of like the kind of the right wing folks that are, you know, looking to kind of like, where's the next kind of grift, and where's the next, where are we going to see the next, say, you know, explosion of right wing extremism, white supremacy? Well, they were kind of making, Brittany Zelodny and stuff in particular was making that point last night on All In with Chris Hayes about, you know, look, these folks aren't going away, right? I mean, and if anything, they're going off into their deeper recesses, and we're not going to see the attacks on the Capitol right now. It's going to start happening kind of like it does in these off, like, you know, these downslopes in the trough, so to speak. It's going to happen more locally. It's going to happen with kind of like assaults and kind of local bombings, what we've kind of seen before. And that's what they're saying, you know, is happening in some of these chats and stuff. So it's not going away, so let's not take our kind of like, you know, eye off the, you know, the, I don't know, the gremlins or whatever you're going to call them. But
yeah, no, it's just it'll be interesting to see what comes from this. So
yeah, you know, I reached out to this, I came across this awesome article. I did put this stuff in the notes. Sorry about this, folks, but to kind of go off on this tangent here. But I reached out to this guy. His name is Seth Simons. He had this awesome article in the New Republic, and It was called "The Comedy Industry Has a Big Alt-Right Problem." If I remember, I'll try to put this in the show notes. But it's like his name is Seth Simons, was in the February 9th edition of New Republic. It's called "The Comedy Industry Has a Big Alt-Right Problem." It's a really kind of haunting and incredible read, right? Of him kind of exposing some of the connections between some of these alt-right folks, Proud Boys people. What's the dude's name? I'm just spacing his name. The dude, Gavin McGinnis, right? And
Crowder.
Well, yeah, but the bridge that the bridge that they've made to the comedy industry as a way of kind of expanding kind of this white ring extremism. So it's a phenomenal piece. I was hoping to be able to get on the show. He's not able to do it, unfortunately, but you will see maybe a little bit down the line, because it was a really, really good piece. But, you know, definitely check out that article. It's called "The Comedy Industry Has a Big Alt-Right Problem." And again, it was in the New Republic. He's got some fantastic reporting on this stuff too, as well. So check him out. So anyways, that was all the stuff that we had no intention to talk about. Now we're talking about it. But in general, how was your week, Sean? I know you said it was kind of like a little disappointing, not a lot going on.
Nothing really too much going on here in Harrisburg. Just, my internet is really bad right now, so just bear with me. It seems like it's just not connecting really well. It's going to be one of those episodes, but not a whole lot going on in Harrisburg. I'm just waiting for the warm weather to get here at this point. It seems like it's a week away now.
Right. Well, you know, here we go. Well, we do have, I do have, just so you know, people can see your name and a picture of you. But since, on our YouTube thing, but since, you know, you're not able to see it, I just get to pick whatever picture I want. So
as long as it's like not me wearing a maxi pad over my mouth.
I don't know. I guess you'll find out if you watch the stream afterwards. I don't know. No, I wouldn't do that to you. But anyhow, I mean,
it was actually pretty funny. I was watching YouTube last week afterwards. I was going to say, I was watching YouTube after this last week and saw our video pop up in my suggested feeds, which was actually pretty funny.
Nice. Well, look, I do think that really is a function of people, like more people subscribing to it and kind of watching the feeds and things like this. I've had a couple other people kind of tell me this, kind of the same thing. And particularly this past week, this has been the hope for a long time of really kind of expanding what we do in the podcast to do kind of more interviews. In my ideal world, we'd be doing kind of three shows a week. We do this, this is kind of like our flagship show. Sean and I kind of Good, Bad, the Ugly in State and National Politics on Fridays. And then a couple different interviews, one kind of live call-in show, and then kind of more of a kind of long form, streamed live on our YouTube station and interviews like that. So, we'll see. A range of things fall into place may happen. I'm going to really target the summer to see if we can kind of systematize that. It's really hard though with COVID to expand too quickly, because so much of my time is spent online teaching and things like this. So it's but I do think the short of it is I do think that's actually made a difference, and people stepping up and kind of like kind of liking the streams, subscribing to it, sharing it with their friends has been a big deal. We had a great show on this past Monday. We talked to Sean O'Leary from the Ohio River Valley Institute about a kind of new report that came out about the impacts of fracking. We had a great turnout. Lots of folks showed up for that and shared it out to kind of more folks, got more followers on our live stream podcast. So it's been good all around. So and that score, things have been good. That's about it. Goodbye. I don't know if you saw this last night, but this is the Sunrise Movement just kind of came out and launched this new campaign for Good Jobs for All. And again, some of their, some of what you're going to see in there, in particular, of the claims are taken right out of the Green New Deal, right? I mean, there are aspects of, say, the job guarantees about kind of like seeing kind of responding to the climate crisis in very concrete ways as a way to kind of generate real good, say, union jobs, right? Having the federal government be the kind of, you know, the employer of last resort. You know, I've got my little, civil defense hat on today. I've got this other hat that I got last week. It's a civilian conservation corps, where you're actually going to, you know, put people to work doing kind of necessary labor, but that's not the kind of labor that is profitable for, you know, the private sector. You know, things like, you know, our national parks, for example, all the trails that were built in our national parks were the result of the original Civilian Conservation Corps back in the New Deal. So they're putting a strong forward push here. And, you know, Sunrise, the reason why I wanted to highlight this and let you know about their campaign, check out the link, listen to their announcement stuff. Sarah Nelson was just kind of like, you know, off the hook on that announcement video, talking about the necessity of kind of organizing kind of around jobs. Ayanna Pressley was on kind of talking about kind of the historical legacy of a jobs guarantee and how important that is, particularly in kind of marginalized communities, Black and Brown communities. So they are really kind of seeing this. Sunrise is really seeing this moment in the ways that we've been, you know, talking about on this podcast and the pages of Raging Chicken for a long time, is that, you know, we need to be constantly organizing and pushing the politicians. And Sunrise has been, you know, really doing just absolutely amazing work on climate, and then really here pushing for the Green New Deal. Now they are mobilizing once again to put pressure upon the politicians. They know, okay, you got this stimulus bill, you got this COVID relief bill. Now that I, you know, maybe is going to make its way through. This is one thing that I didn't put in the show notes that I should have. You talk about the, you know, the Democrats, like, you know, caving to themselves this week over stimulus. We can talk about that too as well in a second. But yeah, Sunrise has done some bang up work on that. So do check out that video if you can. Good Jobs for All. Check out their campaign, and they have the campaign. It's called Join the Raise. If you want to kind of sign up, you're interested in getting involved locally, there's a kind of a number of Sunrise chapters across Pennsylvania, you know, so chances are there's one near you. So they can put you in touch with folks if you're not already involved in Sunrise. So do check it out. Sean, I was going to say. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say one of the things I've noticed, it seems like Malcolm Kenyatta has jumped onto not the Green New Deal per se, but, you know, in endorsing you know, that union jobs for all when he came out in support of a fracking moratorium. So, you know, I think we're ready to see like that type of stuff happen here in Pennsylvania with the Senate race that's been going on, especially around, you know, like the environmental policies and stuff like that. Like who else, see if Fetterman or others are going to jump on this stuff as well.
You know, I'm even hoping that, we'll see. I mean, in my perfect world, we'd also get a candidate that was going to be to the left of Kenyatta, that would actually kind of call for him to kind of finalize and kind of like specify a little bit more on some of the kind of policy commitments. Because I agree with you, right? But it'd be really nice to kind of say, okay, what do we actually mean by this, right? What's the hesitancy to get behind, say, the Green New Deal? And my guess is it has to do with kind of like national Democratic Committee, maybe the DNC, Biden administration people, whatever like this, who have all their hesitancy and they're all afraid of the Green New Deal. That might have some kind of influence on here. But I could be totally wrong. But I'd love to see, well, you know, I guess we're going to see some of this when say the debates come and the primary really gets kicking. So we shall see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where candidates go with that, you know, because we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see where this goes. So it'll be kind of cool to see. So let me ask you this. We didn't talk about, I didn't put this in the show notes initially, in part because it was, you know, it was one of the things that got me absolutely kind of like infuriated this week. And it feels like it happened last week, but it was actually just this week. And actually, you know, the COVID relief bill is not yet passed, right? There's been all sorts of going back and forth. I'm curious what your take is on this, you know, on the move to limit the eligibility for these $1,400 checks, which is already a compromise position, right? It should have been 2,000 checks.
You gotta let Democrats negotiate with themselves.
Yeah, so I mean,
what fighting with themselves over stuff that's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, what's your take on that?
I think they're just trying to stroke Manchin's ego. Or make him president, one or the other.
But why? Like, I mean, that's here's what I don't understand. Is like, what? Why? I mean, what's the like, what's the what leverage does Manchin have? I mean, do you actually think Manchin would vote against the entire relief package if they didn't make this move?
I don't think so. I mean, I would force someone to call a bluff.
Yeah, I mean, like, also, and then Gene Shaheen, right, from New Hampshire, kind of joined, you know, in on the, you know, discussion, saying no, that's yeah, you're too many people are being included, and now as a result of dropping the eligibility, right, they basically, you know, basically it was like, okay, if you make under $75,000, you will qualify for the full $1,400 check. If you made under $100,000, right? If you made above $75,000 and up to $100,000, you would get a check, but it would gradually diminish over time. Until you hit $100,000, then you don't qualify anymore, right? So the fight was over dropping it and giving relief to fewer people, right? And if they made the difference between $80,000 and $100,000. So that was this big debate over this stuff. And it's like literally a drop in the bucket in the overall bill. So it doesn't even like affect the end numbers of it. That's the first part about it. The second thing is that $12 billion, they said, that I believe the number is about 12 million people who receive checks from Trump, right? That last $600 check, they got the $600 check. So 12 million people will not get the check under Biden's plan that got a check from Trump, right? I mean, so I look at that. I'm like, politically, that's a disaster. Or Pecker, especially if you're talking about in districts like Jeanine Shaheen. I don't understand her at all, because her constituency are exactly those people who are going to be denied those checks. Right. So, I mean, I don't even know, like, what the hell's going on. It's bad enough, right, that the Democrats showed no spine when it comes to actually fighting for the $15 hour minimum wage, except for, of course, Bernie Sanders and kind of, you know, some of the more progressives. But as a whole, the Biden administration, well, you know, throw their hands up. We're going to let an unelected parliamentarian who's there to kind of help us understand the rules. We're going to let her make the decision and put all the blame on her. Right.
Well, I mean, it's all Kamala Harris is the person to blame for this, in my opinion, not the parliamentarian, because Harris could say, no, we're voting for it and we're going to vote for it.
Well, let's be clear. I think it's Harris and Biden. I mean, I'm sure Biden, I mean, she's not going to step. Are you kidding me? She's not going to step out in front of Biden and contradict him in the first few months of his administration. There's no way. So this, in my mind, this risk rests solely on Biden's feet. I mean, I don't know why. You saw what Biden did this week. I can't believe we haven't talked about this. I just, you know, this is where my head's been all week. But you saw what Biden did in terms of like coming out in support of the right to organize, right? In the light of what's going on in Alabama with the Amazon workers organizing, right? He came out. I think he did a freaking amazing job in coming out and making and no holds barred. People have a right to organize and not be intimidated by their employer. I don't ever remember hearing that from an elected, like especially a president of the United States or a high level elected official, come out and saying like that. And that was actually amazing. He used the bully pulpit to put pressure upon it, right? And yes, he chose not to single out Amazon. He chose not to name Jeff Bezos. I get it, right? So we can bicker around that. But that was a freaking huge statement. So why use it there and not also do it with, say, the minimum wage? Why not also do it with, you know, insisting upon a $2,000 check, right? That just blows my mind. Just blows my mind. But
yeah, whatever. I mean, like what? I mean, I feel like people don't feel like calling Manchin's bluff. What's he going to do? Vote no and sink the whole entire bill? Like, you know what I mean? Like if he put his back against the wall,
totally.
Stroking his ego for what at this point?
No, exactly. Imagine if Biden just hopped on Air Force, like Air Force One, flew into West Virginia, right, and had rallies with people you got all the freaking teachers in West Virginia. Call them up. They'd be happy to come out and support this. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And you've already got an organized constituency. You're supposed to be pro-labor, right? You've got an organized constituency in West Virginia. That's your organized constituency that could put pressure upon Joe Manchin. Why the hell aren't you out in West Virginia working with those folks, or at least sending out people from your administration to rally those people to pressure Manchin, right? Yes, Manchin's going to get pissed.
I think Manchin should be told, like, I think Manchin should be told, keep doing this in your state. Like, you know what I mean?
You cut out. You said Manchin.
You're going to get put towards the bottom of the list when it. No, like tell Manchin is going to be put towards the bottom of the list when it comes towards infrastructure spending going to their state and see how they like it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, start pressuring them that way.
Well, I would say it the other way around. I mean, because like, why make people of West Virginia pay, right? Because that hurts people in West Virginia, right? Why not get the organized people in West Virginia to pressure Manchin, right?
Because no, I mean, Biden can do stuff like that and strong arm him and hold stuff over his head. Like, okay, these projects won't get finished, you know, if you're going to continue to fuck around like this.
No, I understand that, right? As a tactic, but I think as a tactic, like I think it's a better tactic to work with the people who are already organized rather than threaten something like infrastructure. Because basically, what's Manchin going to do in that? Like, if I was Joe Manchin in that situation, Joe Biden is sitting like there, I could just go back to my constituencies. Like, I believe this goes on. Like, and like now I'm being threatened by the president of the United States, right? That they're going to take away infrastructure funding if I don't get along with this bill and I don't believe in this bill. It allows him to take a high ground. Right. But if you get pressure from his constituency, right, he's got no place to run. But whatever. Who the hell am I? Right. And this is like another episode of like, you know, Kevin's free kind of political consulting, you know, episode 79 or something like this. I don't know. It's got me frustrated. And then all the political capital, and we also didn't put this in the show notes, but all the political capital that they invested in kind of New York Tandon's nomination only to kind of have it kind of like fail in the end. Right. But whatever. I'm a little frustrated on that score this week, I'll have to say. And no, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. No, I fundamentally recognize how important and good this bill is that's coming through Congress. Yes, I'm recognizing that Biden has come out and major support for Amazon workers who are organizing in Alabama. I get all that, right? We can do two things at once, folks, right? We can actually both like recognize the accomplishments and criticize the failures, right? Politicians are not freaking demigods, right? We don't have to kind of like analyze the world through pro-con either or on off like lens. We can do both at once. Our role in the movement, a progressive community, is not simply to kind of like, you know, wag the tail of the dog, right? Or I don't even know if that makes sense, but you know, to do the bidding of the people in power when they've got a D after their name, that's garbage. So whatever. I didn't even realize I was that upset about this, Ron. Oh, man. Sean is having some major internet issues, I think, this year, today.
Yeah, my internet's pretty shitty today.
Oh, man. Well, we'll probably end up making this a little bit shorter than today, too, as well, because I've done enough of talking into kind of blank Zoom screens this week for my liking. Seriously. But just want to say, point you, I mean, there's two big Supreme Court rulings, this week. Wait, okay. If you're back on, let me see if I can, where's your picture? I'm gonna shut your picture down so it's not covering up your Zoom stuff. The big Supreme Court rulings, this week, making it harder for undocumented migrants to fight deportation. I mean, this is actually really, in my view, it's a tragic, not only is it kind of like a bad ruling, but it's a tragic one. I mean, you give you, here's this was the case, is Clemente Periida, I think is how you say it, I don't know, Periida, was fined $100 under Nebraska state law after he pleaded no contest to the crime of, quote, attempted criminal impersonation, right? He's an undocumented worker, right? And it was caught. The lower courts ruled that the conviction was enough to trigger his deportation because it was a crime of, quote, moral turpitude under state law. Right. That finding and turning meant that he was ruled ineligible when he appealed to the attorney general to cancel deportation because of the impact it would have on his son, a U.S. citizen, and the rest of his family. The attorney general does not have such discretion, but if the applicant has been found guilty of a crime of moral turpitude, he does. Right. So basically, you had Neil Gorsuch writing the majority opinion in this one and say, yeah. Yeah, too bad for him. Let's get him out. Right. It's not going to give, even though he's spent like 25 years in the United States, is going to raise family here and everything. Doesn't matter. We're going to take a hard line on immigration stuff, and we're going to boot the dude out of the country, right? That's the Supreme Court ruling. And that does not bode well kind of moving forward, especially since you've seen kind of ICE has been basically freelancing in a lot of situations, kind of deporting people, tracking people down, deporting them without the knowledge or kind of against the wishes of the Biden administration. This Supreme Court decision is gonna play into this. Then the second one, of course, was about a limiting of the Freedom of Information Act. If you dig into that one, especially where basically, you know, you had the Sierra Club was looking for, you know, kind of list of where the federal government had determined that there was particular species that were, you know, at risk. And they basically, Amy Coney Barrett and, like I said, Elena Kagan joined in on this one, basically said that you don't have the right to that information because it wasn't a final decision, right? We have this problem in Pennsylvania too as well, right? When you're filing a Freedom of Information Act, there's discussions that are part of, what they call deliberations, right? You're not allowed to have that information, right? It's considered exempt under the Freedom of Information Act or kind of whatever it is, because it's not finalized, right? However, if you're thinking about like a democracy, right, the important things about a democracy is not just to know what the final decisions are, but also how they got there, right? And so, for example, in this issue, like in this case, if you have a species, for example, that was determined to be at risk, yet as part of those deliberations, like they decided to say, no, we're going to change some rules or we're going to leave them off the list because we don't want to protect them, so they're not declared an endangered species. You'll never know that, right? So welcome, Amy Coney Barrett. This is her first decision. And like I said, if Elena Kagan did not join with them, still would have been a 5-3 decision. All right. This is the legacy of the Trump court. This is the legacy of the Trump administration. This is what it means to kind of, elect somebody like that. It's pretty devastating, but it is what it is, man. Here we go. I mentioned this stuff about kind of John Kerry. We'll see what happens with that. It's not the reason why I was a little bit hesitant to go too hard on that is in part because it's not 100% clear what Kerry is doing there. I think that anybody who's been paying attention to the connections between the Democratic Party and Wall Street or, you know, Republican Party and Wall Street and kind of elected officials, let's just leave it at that, knows that anytime you bring in Wall Street executives to be part of a task force, they're going to have a particular bent that is going to look for market-based solutions to everything and ways that they're going to be able to profit off of whatever policy that they're looking at. So by bringing in a Wall Street veteran to be part of a climate team, kind of addressing climate crisis, right, they're trying to kind of encourage banks, right, in these kind of public-private partnerships to pony up funds, right, to kind of help with climate mitigation. Right? Again, this is all like an ass-backwards way to kind of actually deal with climate mitigation instead of having a full-throated, say, Green New Deal or climate policy that is going to kind of invest public money into kind of mitigating the climate crisis and holding those people who are, you know, in part responsible, like Wall Street, for the climate crisis, holding them a little bit accountable in that and kind of excluding them from the inner deliberations. But that's not what happens here. Crazy. Last thing I'll say about here too as well is that Jane McAlevey, who, you know, we've talked about on the show quite a bit. She's just an absolutely amazing organizer, has got some just phenomenal books on organizing that are kind of out there. No Shortcuts is the kind of the one book that is kind of like, I don't know, like a Bible for me and a lot of other kind of faculty members, organizers, that are working out there. But McAlevey basically took to the page of the Nation this week to warn labor leaders about Silicon Valley's promise for sectoral bargaining. So what's happening right now is that you recall there was Act 22 that was passed in California, was backed by huge amounts of money that was coming from Silicon Valley firms that really were pushing for a third classification of workers. right? They basically said, you know, look, we've got all these new kind of disruptive technologies like Uber, and then we've got Amazon, and we've got, you know, ride shares, and we've got, you know, people who are going to go out and bring, you know, get your groceries for you, all that stuff, right? And they want to continue to basically say that those people are not workers, they're independent contractors. And so if we want to kind of like change it, we don't need to include them as actually full-time workers or employees of a company, because then of course the company would have to pay Social Security taxes, would have to kind of maybe provide them with benefits. They don't want those costs. They want to offload all that onto the workers. Instead of that, they're saying we should just develop a third category, right, for those workers, right? So basically they're looking for a way of systematizing, right, and putting into kind of like law, right, or at least regulation, a new category of workers that will never be able to lay claim to full employment status, right? And so this is what McAlevey says, just as I'll give you a piece of this, right? So she says, as a signatory to this letter, there's a letter that's written, so which has the somewhat bookish title of Sectoral Bargaining Principles of Reform, I want to boil it down to its urgent message. There is a massive power play taking place right now, being led by some of the biggest titans of industry, particularly in Silicon Valley, who seek to avoid having to contribute to society at all by rewriting the legal status of their workers. The current debate about who is a worker, who is an independent contractor, and who is legally eligible for these things like Social Security, unemployment insurance centers around the question of whether state and federal policymakers accept or reject what is referred to as a third category of worker. The tech industry proposals unfortunately picked up steam on the heels of Proposition 22 in California, which made a mockery of democracy when Uber and Lyft spent upwards of $220 million to convince voters against their interest that the ride-hail drivers and food delivery workers toiling under their platforms are somehow not real workers. Right. So that's, you know, she's boiling it down there. I definitely check out her article in the show notes, especially if you're involved in labor movement in any way. I mean, I think that we need words like these from veterans in the labor movement, activists, organizers, you know, kind of like bottom up grassroots rank and file organizers who are going to push on kind of, you know, labor leaders, basically, not to buy into this and take a hard line kind of against this and push and organize around it. So definitely check out her article there. Sean, can I dish this one to you? So Federico Klein, Trump appointee to the Department of State, please do tell.
Yes, an appointee to the Department of State was arrested this week, Trump appointee to the Department of State, for taking part in the insurrection back in January.
Whatever the hell.
Fuck,
it was.
It's been 2 months.
I know.
Yeah. But
2 months almost to the day. Holy crap. 2 months almost to the day.
I know.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
I find this story to be not that surprising, considering that there were Trump people already reported on involved with the Stop the Steal rallies, like Trump appointees involved in working the Jericho marches and the Stop the Steal rallies that popped up after the election. I think if anything, it just shows that the insurrection was deeper than what people, and also like, Trump fucking staffed a lot of these patronage offices with hardcore Christian right wing white nationalists. So I think that's one of the things we're going to start trying to see trickling out more and more. How many religious zealots that Trump put in these positions and what they were doing in the days after the election. I definitely think there's a story there for something more. You know, we saw some of that here in Harrisburg with like staffers coming up here who were right. Christian nationalists, and so we'll see what else happens.
There we go. Yeah, we're going to be living with this for a while. There's no doubt about it. And you know, it's going to be important that we continue to remind each other that these things are going on. We pay attention to them, and to kind of update each other on these issues, because it's easy, you know, it's easier to start to kind of look away and kind of let that recede into the background, the Trump administration, because look, it was a horror show for 4 years, more than 4 years, but it was a horror show for 4 years that took a personal tolls, emotional tolls, economic tolls on all of us, right? Yes, in a variety of different ways, absolutely. Some more than others, absolutely. but it's taken a major toll. So to kind of, it's only, you know, human to want to kind of like put that behind us. The problem is that the people that were, you know, most involved with kind of stoking the flames of the worst of that administration, right, are planning for the long haul, and they're not going away. So this is kind of one of the latest, Federico Klein, there will be more. I guarantee it. All the more reason why Congress should be continuing the investigations and uncovering kind of like where these plants are. You know, the military has already begun some of these discussions to try to, better screen recruits. That's happening in some police departments too as well. Although there's other Supreme police departments who kind of welcome them with open arms. So we shall see. So anything else on the national score, Sean?
Nothing too much.
All right, cool. So listen, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back from this, we're going to head into our discussion of little joys of right here in Pennsylvania. Just very excited that we can say, you know, we're number one. I want to remind you that you can become a patron of this podcast, of Raging Chicken's work, by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month, right? I can't even tell you how much I appreciate all of our patrons, people who have been with us. Even before we had a Patreon page, we have people who have joined as members through Podbean, through PayPal. I mean, it's really meant kind of a huge, huge, it's meant a lot. It's meant a ton to keep this going. And I'll tell you right now, is one of the reasons we're going to continue to make such a push right now to try to see if we can get more attention to what's going on our YouTube page, making sure you're hitting subscribe over the YouTube page, that you're sharing the show with everybody you can, and to kind of like push for you to become a patron of this podcast of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. We'd like to kind of not only just expand the show, but also to make sure that we can actually kind of, you know, simulcast this to kind of multiple platforms at once. In order to really do that without kind of like buying two other computers, right, to deal with the processing power, you really have to have a third party service in order to kind of distribute that stuff. But of course, that costs money. Last thing I want to do is get out in front of our budget, so I'm not going to do that. But, you know, you can help out. You can make sure that this show kind of reaches more people. Hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast. Share it out to everyone and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. We'll be back right after this quick message.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1972. That was the day auto workers at GM's Chevy Vega plant in Lordstown, Ohio, walked out on strike. The strike lasted for 18 days. The issues that fueled it were reminiscent of the sit-downs and wildcats that built the UAW in the 30s and 40s. Workers at Lordstown wanted greater control over the production process. The young, integrated workforce of the 1960s social protest era was fed up with long days, forced overtime, increased automation, and dangerous speed-up on the assembly line. Long-standing grievances numbered in the thousands, and disciplinary firings were common. Absenteeism was rampant, morale was so low that cars left the assembly line incomplete or vandalized. By the time the strike ended, many felt it was called simply to allow workers to blow off steam. There was no real change in the production process, but jobs eliminated in the 1970 contract were restored, and some 1,400 disciplinary layoffs were dropped. The worker malaise suffered there came to be known as the Lordstown Syndrome. In his book, Stayin' Alive, the 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class, Jefferson Cowie notes that the strike compelled the Senate to hold hearings on alienation at work. Its committee produced the report Work in America. This report confirmed many workers at all occupational levels feel locked in. Their mobility blocked, the opportunity to grow lacking in their jobs, challenge missing from their tasks. Cowie concludes that the strike and report initiated the quality of work-life movement that sought to redesign work, introduce automation differently, and invest in human relations strategies, most of which continued to empower management, not workers, albeit with a gentler hand.
Well, Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. Here we are with our kind of PA focus. So in kind of perfect Pennsylvania fashion, we've got kind of like scandal in the Republican Party once again. Sean, what's going on?
Yeah, the Senator Jay Corman appointed Mike Regan's wife to the Pennsylvania Gaming Board Commission this week. For those of you who don't know, Pennsylvania Gaming Board pays $145,000 a year. You get awesome perks like free travel to like any casinos in the world. You can't gamble in those casinos, but you can get to go there for the perks and to study and to widen your knowledge, broaden your horizons on the gaming industry worldwide. So,
well, look, I'm sure she was the most qualified person for the job.
Yeah, she was so qualified. They didn't even have a resume yet on hand.
Who needs a resume when you're that qualified? Everybody knows, Sean.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, this is just like another amazing story of like nepotism and grift here in Pennsylvania. This one is like, whenever someone goes to the gaming board, it's a pretty, not scandalous, but like, for instance, like a lot of the, like former legislators get loaded up onto the gaming board, or people who are like, I don't know, connected to the, you gotta be connected in some way, but yeah, this is just worse than others. Yeah, I mean, like, I guess this is what you get for saving your marriage. I don't know. You know, infidelities and this is how you repay your spouse for that stuff. I'm not sure, not going to go there, but you know, not, but
you're just, yeah, saying, just, I mean, you're just saying, you know, just,
yeah,
it could be.
Yeah. Just saying, but like, it's just like complete utter bullshit. It just shows you how like classic, like naked corruption is in Harrisburg. I mean, what else is there to say about this? they made the announcement. They made no announcement. They made their announcement by just changing out her name on the website, removing the other person's name who stepped down and putting her name on there without telling anyone. And then Spotlight PA asked for a resume on hand. They didn't have it. So, yeah.
Well, I hear that.
Mike Regan's rumored to be running for higher office. I think he'll be resigning.
Really?
What's that?
You say Regan's going to be resigning?
I wouldn't be surprised if Regan resigns. I don't think he wants to be in the state senate any longer. I think he's going to be running for governor or for senate. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh my god!
But I think this is like I think this is just like a golden parachute on the way out the door.
Sounds like it. I hear that they're actually now considering kind of remaking the state motto to kind of in light of a lot of this stuff. I think it's like something like, if I remember, it's like the Keystone State where the grift is built in. I think that's how it's supposed to go. Not exactly.
Yeah, you know,
sure.
Like that. So like, this is gonna be like my lifetime goal, is to get a spot on the gaming board. I mean,
oh my god!
I always say the people who get paid the most in Harrisburg do the least amount of work, and this is like,
I need a job like that, man. I need a job like that. I really, really do.
I'll put your name in there next time a spot opens up.
Please do. I would be. Look, I will promise that I will attend every trip. I will learn everything I can about, you know,
you just gotta make the Harrisburg once a month. Can you do that?
Dude, I'll do it twice a month. I will go 100% in. I'll come to Harrisburg twice a month. Right. And look, I'll travel for it too. Right. As long as my expenses are paid, I will travel for it too as well. I'll be fine with that. Right.
Yeah.
I've got the word of mouth resume. It's pretty good. So I'm already ticking that box.
send you a copy of that.
Yeah. You just get to talk to people. Just, that's all. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, man. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, like, the naked corruption in Harrisburg just never seems to amaze me. This one, a little bit more than some of the other shit that happens. So.
Pretty crazy, man. Pretty crazy.
I saw your neighbors were spotlighted on the news this week?
Damn straight, man. Here at Bucks County, man, we hold the, you know, again, look, the numbers aren't huge, right? It's only like, I think, I don't know, 3 or 4 or something like this. So
I think 4.
Yeah, I don't want to brag too much, but look, Bucks County sent the most people down of all the Pennsylvania state, all the Pennsylvania counties, right? And now remember, Pennsylvania is number one. We sent the most people to the insurrection who've been arrested so far, right? So we already hold that like esteemed thing. Now, but I am in the county, right, that sent the most people of all the Pennsylvania counties, right? So Bucks County sent the most folks down there, and 2 of them right from Doylestown, right? Right from the county seat, right? What's always considered is that the liberal part of Bucks County, right? And we're represented by, you know, none other than, you know, Mr. Fitzpatrick, Representative Fitzpatrick, right? So, you know, it'd be great to know about the hard stand that he took, right, to make sure that this never happens again. And I'm sure that all the people that support him will make sure that he does the right thing, right? So I got a little bit back and some back and forth with some folks on Twitter, not in a bad way, but kind of more like in a discussion way about this, because, you know, I've gotten pretty like sick and tired of hearing the kind of the Pennsylvania comments, right? Like in part, look, there is no doubt that there is some deep, deep red parts of the state and deep red people in the state. But, you know, the whole idea that we're going to
some of the most reactionary fucking places are
in the suburbs.
I was going to say some of the most reactionary are the suburbs of Harrisburg, like on, you know, the West Shore and the East Shore, like outside the city, like where people move to out of white flight. No, like the reactionary suburbs, Philadelphia suburbs are pretty, pretty insane. That is for sure.
Yeah. And this, you know, people like to, you know, like to like paint Pennsylvania in this kind of brush and basically, you know, again, this has been the problem. One of the reasons why I'm sick and tired of the Pennsylvania stuff is not because there's not a serious issue with kind of like, say, right wing extremism in this case. Obviously, there is, given the number of people who've been arrested. Right. But my point is, right, it's not like you've got like all the happy utopian places in kind of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Right. And everything else is kind of throwaway country. Right. Because that's actually that is actually the approach that the Democratic Party in the state has taken for years. Why they haven't invested money, haven't invested time, haven't organized this, and have written it all off and concentrated only on the kind of the major cities. Right. And what we've seen, obviously, with PA Stands Up, we've seen with the campaigns that were run kind of like, you know, all around Harrisburg, for example, in the Lehigh Valley, right, in kind of even the Northeast Pennsylvania, places all over the state, in Northwest Pennsylvania, for that matter. Yes, not all those candidates won, right, but we see people and movements happening in those spaces that kind of really change the dynamic 100%. And Jonathan Smucker's been like, has hammered on this point for years. Right. The idea, if you start kind of organizing with this kind of this mentality that you're just kind of looking for people that have a, you know, that are shaded blue or are shaded red, then you're missing the whole game. You have to organize with people and around their needs. Right. That's what Lancaster Stands Up like. But that's how they were successful. That's how that kind of grew into the PA Stands Up. And that's where we see the kind of organizing happening in the state right now. And again, I'm 100% behind, you know, clear about the fact that that doesn't mean, say, Pennsylvania is somehow kind of a liberal paradise. I get the fact that we've got significant challenges. But the fact that so many people I live in freaking Trump country in Bucks County. Right. There are people who still have banners outside their house today. Well, I don't know. They did. Maybe they were waiting for Wednesday's kind of like official inauguration of Trump that never happened. So maybe they've taken him down now. I don't know. But there's significant problems in here. You go down into kind of like Sean was saying, in the suburbs of Harrisburg,
but also
in the
like,
suburbs
I feel like
of Philadelphia, you're going to see those things too as well.
I also think like one of the things like there's an activist out here who I know that always says noun verb and like they're from Perry County or they're from Pennsylvania as like a class reductionist take. Now, I don't think like the party doesn't engage in this, but there are definitely progressives and progressive activists who look down on the rest of the state or the more rural areas.
Exactly.
By saying, oh, it's just Pennsylvania.
Yep.
You know, there are people out in Harrisburg who will say that where like, no, this isn't Pennsylvania. Like, these are your wealthy suburbanites. Like, this is why I hate this, like, this you know, like class or like debt was an overriding factor in the insurrection or stuff like that. Like, no, these people had the means to travel, book hotels, right? Like, and travel overnight in some cases. You look at the list, like states number 2 and 3 are Florida and Texas. People fucking travel from these states to get arrested in D.C. on the 6th. But like a lot of the things like I hear is like, oh, it's just pencil talking. That's it. We're like, no, a lot of this shit that's happening right now is coming from the suburbs, the wealthy suburbs of Philadelphia or, you know, the Harrisburg area or like out in Lancaster, where the people with like actual wealth and means have been, you know, doing this stuff. And they've been doing this stuff for years now. What's happening is you're seeing a lot of the old money people who are Republicans or have been Republicans for a while, or like your suburbanites, like your old money people in Doylestown who have been quiet Republicans are now getting more outspoken because they've always been racist, but it's a lot less. Their numbers are dwindling. Like, you know what I mean? Like their voting power is dwindling. Like, how many of these people from Bluebell, Pennsylvania, or
totally
like, were involved like Newtown or Yardley, exactly, like old money establishments of the Philadelphia suburbs that went down to this? Like a whole lot of wealth is involved with this. And I feel like by just saying, oh, that's Pawtucky, it gives an excuse or it looks over the wealthy suburban resident who took part in this riot, or the suburban residents who had the means to take part in this riot. And then you're actually like, you know, because there were a lot of states, a lot of counties in the state this year that outperformed 2016. You know, like, I don't want to say the Democratic Party is ignoring, but they are for the most part. They just don't have any infrastructure set up. But like, there are organizations where like that cut down those margins in counties around here in central Pennsylvania, where a lot of this stuff is coming from the suburbs, a lot, or the suburban wealth, in my opinion, or my view. It's like that suburban class structure of the gated community and stuff like that. And yeah, the very reactionary, like Frank Rizzo idolization that still goes on within the people who live or from Philadelphia and that generation of Philadelphia.
Yeah, look, and there's that, you know, you're talking about a whole bunch of folks that you know, say, you know, a good chunk of, say, white folks, right, who were like from Northeast Philadelphia, a lot of them kind of associated with law enforcement and this kind of stuff, right, who then moved out of Northeast Philadelphia, moved into kind of like more kind of central Bucks or kind of like southern Bucks County.
And even like same thing with like with Fishtown and Kensington and like the.
Yep, 100%.
The exactly. Harder neighborhoods, like in the River Wards, Port Richmond, Fishtown. Like there was always like a class stratification where I'm from in Philadelphia, lower North Philly, like lower Northeast, and that bridge of like the River Wards, Kensington, and even the people in the far Northeast or the Northeast Philly. Like, you know, like where my family grew up, just a bunch of resentful old white people who ended up moving to the suburbs in the past 20 or 30 years. You know, they had that union job, you know, those jobs are now gone. And now they're just stuck in the suburbs of like Bensalem, Levittown, or Bristol and stuff like that. Those parts of like Bucks County, where it's now like, yeah, it's just white resentment politics.
Yep.
And it's just they've never grown out of that.
It's crazy, man. So that's, and there you have it. So I mean, like again, I think. The good news, once again, and I want to keep on coming back to this, is that, you know, this is why, like, one of the reasons, once again, I'm so excited about talking to Representative Elizabeth Fiedler and the state senator Nikhil Saval on Monday, in part because, you know, they understand that, right? And the organizing they've done around this has been understand it. Rick Kujewski kind of understands this, right? The fact that, you know, I talked to some folks in like the Lehigh Valley, for example, and some folks in Northeast PA. Malcolm Keanu's in this group too as well. We talked about this either last week or a couple of weeks ago, where these are folks that have shown up in more rural communities, in smaller towns, and have helped been there to kind of support, you know, kind of progressive candidates, but also with progressive movements in their fights. And I think there's a clear-headedness about, you know, about the progressives in PA and PA state politics right now, about what it actually means to organize. And it's not about kind of ideological purity. It's not about kind of like, yes, just you're organizing Ds, you're organizing around issues, you're organizing the needs of working people, you're organizing a mass movement. And that is like, you know, one of the best places we could be in. All the more reason why we have to continue to support these folks. We have to continue to build these movements, but crazy. Cool. Well, do check out the link. The Penn Environment, the Research and Policy Center, they just put out a new report. It's talking about microplastic contamination. Now, again, this is something that is not new, right? There's been multiple reports on this, but the fact that they actually went out and kind of did this testing has basically said all of our water supply in the entire state is contaminated with these microplastics. And, you know, there's a bunch of research that's out there about kind of like the long-term harmful effects of microplastics, in addition to the chemicals that go into them, these like pseudoestrogens and things like this, which are, you're having all sorts of impacts on kind of on, you know, genetic development and things like this. This is kind of a big deal in this kind of report. It's a super report. Do go ahead and check that out. And they're kind of promoting this bill, such as the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. That's a kind of federal legislation. Which would ban, I think it's, let me just double check. Yeah, it's federal legislation that would ban single-use plastics and environmental remediation effort and support environmental remediation efforts. Kind of really important. We see how that stuff comes home directly in our community. So I just wanted to give them a shout out today because I thought it's an important report to see what's kind of happening on the ground within our waters. Anything else you got, Sean, for PA?
I guess we can talk about the fun we had with the Proud Boys last week.
Oh, please do.
You know, some Proud Boys came to Harrisburg. A bunch of Proud Boys came to Harrisburg this week. Schwetz and others that Jordan Hopkins was talking about on our podcast recently. And, you know, anti-fascist people that I know put up a bunch of flyers on front, second, and third streets. For like a mile, pretty much every street post and lamp and mailbox went uncovered. Pretty much calling these people out on their shit. They've been using Harrisburg the past few months, a couple months since the insurrection, as a staging ground for their rallies and stuff like that. You know, pretty much like the Proud Boys in Philadelphia and the eastern part of the state are in shambles. So it looks like they're using the Harrisburg to organize in. So they were met with, fucking signs and posts that put up their that had their names on it on every street pole, explaining who they were, explaining what the Patriot Party was and what it does. And no, I mean, like, they were upset, visibly upset. There was a photographer I know who got pictures of them ripping down the signs calling them out. And they were like literally just going up and down 2nd Street in downtown Harrisburg, hitting up every single sign. Like there were more signs of like that they could handle. So pretty much, like, you know, people are watching what they're doing and that they're not going to go doing this stuff in Harrisburg unchallenged. So having some fun with that.
There you go. You got to love that, right? And you weren't
Dickie Schwetz.
Yeah, there you go. Dickie Schwetz, man. Dickie Schwetz. Yeah, all the more reason, I swear to God, you know, yeah, Dickie Schwetz. Do go ahead and check out too as well along the Dickie Schwetz thing. I got any chance I get.
They were not happy.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And they were not happy. Their Telegram chats were popping off afterwards. I'm talking about kicking people out, throwing people out of the group chats because of this, and you know, just snitching on themselves. And it wasn't just the group chats they were doing it in. So, you know, fine with that.
There you go. Fine. Have at it. Eat your own. That's what I like to see. All right, cool. Well, the last thing I want to say on, as you know, we've talked about this before. I'm going to try to get somebody to come on the program and it's going to talk about this kind of more directly. I'm really interested in seeing what's happening on the ground. Lock Haven University, the faculty there are going to be holding a virtual town hall on March 30th. That's going to be about that controversial integration of Lock Haven University with Mansfield and Bloomsburg. So there's that's coming up. That's coming up in the on March 30th. I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. That's coming up on March 30th, and hopefully we'll have somebody that's coming on. But it's good to see some of this organizing that's going on. I know there's been some increasing, you know, if you've been following on social media at all, there's been this campaign that's been using the hashtag Save Our State Schools, like hashtag Save Our State Schools. There's been some more attention paid to some of the organizing efforts that are going on and some of the things that are going to need to happen in to kind of push back against some of the austerity measures that are being executed on all state campuses across the state. We're obviously we're seeing kind of people being hacked at at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, where we see some of the largest cutbacks. And we continue to have a state system chancellor who's basically continues to lie to the state legislature about sorry, let me see if I get this. Okay. State legislator who is, lying to kind of like the public about what's actually happening with the finances of the university so he can accomplish some end that he's already got envisioned there. So, so we shall see. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back after this break, it'll be this week's last call. I want to remind you, you can become a patron of this podcast of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. We'll be back right after this short break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's this week's last call. Yes, here we are talking about beer news, space news, whatever's kind of else is going on. Sean has gone to the bathroom, so he's in a much better space to kind of approach the last call this week. We're all very, very happy. Welcome back, Sean. And I've got a few things here, some cool space news. I actually watched this a little bit with my kids. SpaceX finally landed the Starship. So you remember they've been going through these test launches, and they call it the SN, like, and whatever number it is. So this is SN10. So SN8 and SN9 kind of like came down. They launched fine. They did all their maneuvers fine. But basically when it hit the ground, boom, hit the ground full speed, full explosion, fireballs, all that kind of stuff. My daughter was jumping up around like when she, the rocket's coming down. She's going, destruction, destruction. It was a side of her I had never seen before. It was great. But this time the SN9 or the SN10, I should say, kind of they corrected some of the problems they had with landing from before. And they actually, it came down and it landed facing up. If you look closely, it was a little bit tilted. It looks like some of the landing pads got a little crunched in there. And there must have been some kind of leak or something, because about depending which report you read, it's like, you know, basically just under 10 minutes after it had landed, the thing kind of exploded in a fireball and shot up into the air. This king smashing down the ground. So once again, SpaceX does what SpaceX does best, right? They kind of blow up rockets so that they can learn and then kind of develop more rockets from there. So got to wonder if that's the most effective way of doing it, but whatever. It is what it is, right? Sometimes, you know, you got to break a few eggs. You want to make the omelet, I guess, right? But
it's so you want to hear some funny news?
Oh, please do tell.
The hours of debate for the COVID relief bill, much time they could spend debating it, got shrunk down to 3 hours because of Ron Johnson taking 11 hours to read the fucking bill on the Senate floor. So they had 20 hours of debate scheduled for the bill. It got shrunk down to 3 hours because the Republicans decided to use all that time reading the bill verbatim on the Senate floor.
Well,
instead of debating the merit.
Is that necessarily a problem though in the end? I mean, doesn't that now, okay, you just, because nobody was freaking listening to that, right?
Oh, I was going to say they just, instead of like all the time they could have had stonewalling, like, I guess policy discussions and shit like that, but
yeah, I wonder how much that's even necessary at this point though, because I mean, this is why I thought that, you know, that little stunt to kind of read the bill kind of in there. And actually, let's be clear. It wasn't the politicians reading the bill. They had their freaking staffers do it. Right. I mean, it's like, and so that's even more disgusting. That just shows you these people, they can't even get there to kind of defend their own filibuster or something like this, to kind of stand up and do this stuff or do their own dirty work. No, they've got to, you know, and again, a lot of these staffers, some of these staffers don't get paid. Some of them get paid very crappily. Right. Other ones, you know, they have to do what they're told to do.
Yeah. So, imagine being a staffer, wasting your fucking day doing that.
Totally. I mean, I would be furious. Right, to have to do that. You have to have one serious kind of like deep level, like QAnon level commitment to, like, you know, the ideological like goal here, for that to not be like such a freaking smack of the face and an insult of the waste of your time. But whatever. But yeah. I just wonder. I mean, like, you know, you had a. I did forget to this is a little piece of sound that I did forget to play. So let me just play that right here real quick before I go back to the space news stuff. This is one that you had sent me today. And this was like, this is the kind we need to hear more of this, right?
Because of an unfortunate and, in my view, misguided decision by the parliamentarian, this reconciliation bill does not include an increase in the minimum wage to $15 an hour. In my view, it should have. And I think the parliamentarian was dead wrong. But more importantly, it is an absurd process that we allow an unelected staffer, somebody who works for the Senate, not elected by anybody, to make a decision as to whether 30 million Americans get a pay raise or not. Now, I don't care how the parliamentarian rules, no parliamentarian should have that power. If people here want to vote against raising the minimum wage, you have that right. You want to vote for it, and I hope you do, you have that right. But we should not shuffle off that responsibility to an unelected staffer. That's
right. That's it right there. Right. I mean, this is kind of what we're saying. This is Bernie Sanders, like, you know, whatever, you know, doing God's work, if you want to say it like that. Right. It's just, you know, right on the money. I mean, so I guess if there's anything that's missing because of the Republicans pulled that stunt is we're not able to hear those kind of arguments. Although I have to say, I don't know if you saw Chris Murphy did with the bill. Did you see that whole, his stuff?
No, but did you see what he tweeted out last weekend?
No.
He tweeted that some, like, I have Republicans, I have friends that are Republicans. I vote for Republicans that work on sports teams. Can't we all just get along?
Whatever. But nonetheless, like credit where credit is due, right? He did an excellent job of breaking down the kind of like the utter hypocrisy of kind of what the Republicans were doing. And it was one of the few times, like, I am no fan of his. Let me be 100% clear, right? But he did it. I think he did a bang up job, basically saying, like, laying out plainly, that was done in ways that could run on the evening news, right? That was, you know, directed towards people in the world, not the people inside the chamber, about just being, look, side-by-side comparison. Here was the relief package under Trump, and the Republicans said, we need this thing. You look it over here, the new one, it's the same thing. But now they're saying that that's a Democratic kind of like, you know, ploy, right? Things like that. Then he looked at over the kind of the size of the bill, things that they had voted on. And the most important part for me was that they broke down this idea that, you know, that this is a partisan bill. So, well, look, 73% of Americans are in support of this. 60% of Republicans are in favor of this bill, right? 70% of Democrats are in favor. So where's the partisanship here? The only partisanship that's getting played out is being played out in the Senate, right? And I want to see this. You know, I have to say that I've been thinking a lot about this week. It's like, you know, Biden made a really good move. And I mentioned this on the show before, like early on when he said that when he was questioning the partisanship, he's like, I'm looking at the American people, right? American people who are Republicans, Democrats, all over the map. Those are the ones I'm working with. The message has to be the Republican Party, right, doesn't represent the American people. Here's the numbers. So and this is a particular thing that they have to play in the media, like they able to say, like, so when you all say partisanship, all you're talking about is like the back and forth that happens inside the Senate building. Americans are not represented by this. Like, look at this. Like Medicare for all, right? 70% approval rating. Raising the minimum wage, 76% approval rating, right? $2,000 checks, 70% approval rating, or 60%+ approval rating, right? That's the kind of message. This is the kind of stuff we need to see more of. And I think that's going to be a good, I hope they're picking up on this to kind of push that going forward, because the media was always going to fall back into, it's like, there's this side and there's that side, and that is partisanship. But the fact of the matter is that the Republican Party represents white identity and a small fraction of the American people when it comes to policy stuff. So that's something that the Democrats who go on there and kind of organizers who kind of go in the media got to continue to hit that wedge, right? Basically saying that Republicans represent Republicans, right? They don't even represent their own constituents, their own Republican Americans, right? They just represent themselves, right, in their games, but whatever. Anyways, didn't mean to go off and got a whole round of, say, politics once again. Good. How you doing, Spooky? I got one of my son's friends has just joined our YouTube channel, so very good. So if you're over there, Spooky, make sure that you subscribe and make sure you like the podcast. Do me a favor. Do me a solid. It'd be fantastic. It'd be great. So other space news this week, kind of space-related news, right? It's more sci-fi stuff. But I was totally psyched about this. New Star Trek movie is in the works. This time it's going to be original script by Kalinda Vasquez. Now, she's one of the main writers of Star Trek Discovery. She has kind of like, I mean, run all sorts of kudos for her work in Discovery. That's been fascinating show. It's got the most kind of diverse cast in any Star Trek series that's ever been. And Star Trek's always been ahead of the curve anyways. So she's going to be actually, she's got an original script that she's writing. We'll see where it goes from there. Very excited about that. And then she's also working with George R.R. Martin of Game of Thrones fame to basically this adaptation of this Roger Zelazny's sci-fi novel Roadmarks for HBO. I've been looking into that. I've never read that book, and I'm a sci-fi fan. I gotta go get that one, so that's on my list now. So totally psyched about her. She's a kind of amazing, got amazing perspective, and kind of a sign of our times in the kind of like the sci-fi world, that she's gonna get front and center in the future of the of Star Trek. That's pretty cool. Other thing, just what I thought was the coolest thing ever. So there's a bunch of this satellite data, right? So apparently, like when we sent probes to other planets and stuff, we have these things. They're like these space. They call them, like, you know, whatever, colloquially, like space hurricanes. And you find them around the poles, and it looks just like a hurricane would if it was in our atmosphere. Kind of circles around and things like this, but instead of it being you know, kind of rain and water vapor, it's plasma. Right. And then it kind of shoots out these electrons and things like this. And so they've been wondering, well, you know, why aren't we seeing this happen on Earth and so on? So these Chinese scientists went back and kind of reviewed a whole bunch of this satellite data and were able to kind of recreate the fact that actually they have happened here. And they actually were able to image one that took place. I forget exactly when it was, but it was really cool images being put out there. If you want to kind of check those out, click click in the show notes to go take a look. But my favorite story for the week, and Sean, this is one that I think is right up your alley because I know how much you'd like to kind of go vacation in space, is Orbital Assembly Corporation. They formed this thing called the Gateway Foundation to launch this. And if you've ever seen 2001 Space Odyssey, if you've ever seen kind of like any sci-fi movie, chances are you've seen a version of the proposed space hotel that they want to put out there. This thing is going to be called Voyager Station. It's one of these big circles that spins. And because it's spinning, right, you have basically artificial gravity that's created. And they're saying that they're going to kind of start construction on this in 2025. Right, with the completion by 2027. Most of the construction will be done by robots. They actually kind of have the assembly system set up, and they basically did a demo of how that assembly is going to work. And they did it here kind of obviously on Earth to show how this thing would function, and it would happen autonomously, initially. There would be a small internal kind of space where astronauts and workers could go while the thing is being built. And then this thing will be kind of ready to launch in 2027. And if you happen to have some personal wealth in about in excess of $50 million, you too can be one of the, grab one of the 400 rooms that's available in the space station. So, there's our future right there, Sean, man. Vacation in space. I'm very excited about that. I'm sure that the handful of people with that kind of money will actually enjoy it very much while they kind of spit down at us from the space station. Right. I'm actually wondering if they'll have the ability to actually like pee out an airlock so they can pee on the rest of us as they're kind of up there circulating the planet. But the fact of the matter is, I watched a portion of they had this big launch and they had the Zoom meeting and like they're all kind of geared up. Except the quality of the broadcast was so bad, right? So you have a company like who's basically going to spend multiple millions of dollars building this kind of advanced technological like marvel, an orbiting space station with artificial gravity, and they can't even do Zoom right. Right, they don't even have enough internet bandwidth, right, to basically do a correct Zoom thing. So the fact that they had this thing, this launch with all these people coming on with this kind of excitement, but this weird Zoom kind of background, some of the cameras were like literally just laptop webcams, not adjusted very well. Sound quality was bad, but they're saying now we're open for investors because send us your money. So, I just smell grift all over this place. It's we shall see. We're going to see who's going to be putting money in this. But, the thing is about the space industry right now, because you've got these billionaires who've just been sinking all this money in this, you never know, right, what billionaire is going to decide that they want to park their money in something like this so that they can, fulfill their childhood dreams. I don't know. But there we have it. Crazy. So Free Will releases this week. Yes, they got the two ones called Sing Me Back Home. It's a DDH double IPA. This is going to be out on Saturday. That's brewed with a base of fluffy flaked oats, wheat, hopped in a kettle with Citra, double rye hop with Strata, Moter, and even more Citra. That comes in at 8.7 ABV. Check out the cool label art there. And like I said, it kind of at the top of the show, if you got some money that is just kind of dying to get, find a home someplace else, you can check out their Saffron Lime Ralphius, which comes in at 17.5 ABV with a $50 price tag. So that's pretty huge. So, Sean, what else you got going on, man? Anything interesting for the week other than trying to fix your Wi-Fi?
Nothing too much. Parents are coming up tomorrow, so they're visiting.
Nice.
It'll be nice. I'll be making a Wegmans trip.
There you go.
And then not a whole lot going on after that. So.
Yeah, I think I'm going
to get my haircut this week.
Well, I was going to say, man, I was like, you kind of like, you're looking pretty dapper there. Move the hair from your top of your head to your beard. I think you're repopulating and replanting, reforesting your beard. I like that.
Yes.
Very good. Yeah, I'm going to be, I have to do some work around the house this weekend. I have to kind of catch up on some work. I literally hit, like I said, we talked about before the show, but I hit kind of close to a bottom this week. It's just been, I can tell you, as I've been, I'm just, when it comes to my work, my job work, I am so freaking utterly burned out. I can't even tell you. And it goes, yes, it's because of COVID. Yes, it's because of the pandemic. Yes, it's because of sitting on Zoom all the time and trying to navigate things in front of a computer all the time. But it, you know, it has a longer history than that. And I'll, you know, that's something I'll get into, kind of in future days. I've been thinking a lot about it.
It'll be its own podcast.
Yeah. I'll come in as it'd be like my travesty of higher education podcast or something like that. I started a blog once, right? And I started writing about this at one point, and I was going to actually do it, but then, you know, again, like anything else, it's like, when am I going to do this? When am I going to spend the time to, you know, write about my experiences, at Kutztown University and, you know, starting a career that was kind of going in a direction which I had so much hope for, and I saw so much possibility at Kutztown, and having that kind of, like, you know, the hope, the my energy, my absolute love for higher education be taken apart brick by brick over the years, because of the administration policies, and frankly some of my, you know, some of my colleagues' kind of desires to just not rock the boat. So, you know, whatever. So I'll get to that someday. Someday that'll come down. But I think that was weighing on me heavily this week, as I kind of now I'm going to be playing catch up all weekend to try to get myself back on track. But this is my church. What can I say? Right here. Oh, man. Well, hey, listen, you know, I hope your internet kind of does you well kind of in the days ahead. And you know, I really, really wish it was going to be warmer this weekend, because I was hoping to barbecue, right? I wanted to get that grill out so bad this weekend, but
it's slowly getting here. It's like, can't wait.
It is. I don't know if you saw this.
It's like, are we a week or two away from, like, no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't know if you saw AccuWeather's, that they put out their kind of spring forecast. And basically they said, like, our region is going to be slow to kind of warm up, which I'm like, no, you did not say that.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for, like, the mid-March freak blizzard that happens every so often.
I'm wondering if that's going to come. My brother-in-law, I told you that I got this snowblower, right? The snowblower that's, like, all electric power, battery operated. It's freaking awesome. The brand is called Ego. I mean, I don't get paid by them or anything like this. If they want me to sponsor that, I will take their sponsorship, because I love their products. But anyways, and my brother-in-law also bought one, right? After kind of hear me raving about it, so he went out and he got one. And during the snow was gone, right? So basically, his neighbor basically came and cleared his walk for him. He's like, "Oh, you get to use it." I'm like, "You wait, I'm not so sure that we're done with the snow yet, so we might still get a shot." Anyways, anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, nothing else. Too much going on. Just waiting for the warm weather to get here at this point.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. Well, all right. We'll kind of cut it there. And so, listen, everybody, want to remind you, make sure you tune in Monday night at 7 p.m. That's March 8th at 7 p.m. I will be talking with State Representative Elizabeth Fiedler, State Senator Nikhil Saval, about a people's budget, progressive organizing in the state. Want to remind you also to kind of make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you hit that like button for this particular stream. Hit that bell so every time we go live, kind of you're reminded of it. And you become a patron of this show by going to patreon.com/RCPress. Become a member for a patron for those $5 a month, man. It's kind of a good deal. Helps keeps us going, helps us expand this podcast and amplify the voice of the movement. Thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate it. We will talk to you soon. Very soon.